Often we think we can identify the flaws in our neighbors. We think it's pretty clear that what they're doing is wrong. But more often, those flaws are merely a projection of something that we don't like or have repressed deep within our own selves. The lines between right and wrong and righteousness and unrighteousness are blurred and permeable. Neither of us is fully weed or wheat. We're both.
That's the Reverend Chrissy Tatum Williamson, and today she brings you a life-giving message entitled, The Gospel According to the Compost Pile. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're honored to welcome the Reverend Chrissy Tatum Williamson, senior pastor of Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. Chrissy earned her bachelor's degree in French and sociology from Furman University, her master of divinity from Wake Forest University School of Divinity, and her master of arts in theology and ethics from Union Theological Seminary. Before coming to Greystone as its first female senior pastor in November of 2018, she served on the pastoral staffs of the Riverside Church in New York City and Myers Park Baptist Church in Charlotte. Chrissy, welcome to Day One.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here. How are you, Peter?
Great. You served as senior pastor of Greystone Baptist in Raleigh, coming up on 2 years now. I imagine you were just getting in the swing of things when the pandemic hit.
Yeah, that's about right.
Give us a snapshot of the church, its people, and its ministries.
That's a great question. You know, when I talk about Greystone, I often say that Greystone's superpower is community. I think different churches have different personalities and different gifts. But the glue that really holds Greystone together is the love that the people have for one another. It's really a remarkable thing. I think it has played out for us in a number of different ways. When my family and I moved to Raleigh, it was December. We moved 2 days after Christmas. And even on a wet, cold work day, really, we had 17 people show up to unload our U-Haul. And then the next day, we had people drop off 4 or 5 huge boxes full of, like, non-perishable saran wrap spices. I mean, we're still using all the stuff up there. So much in there. And then 3 months later, we moved into our, as my six-year-old calls it, our long-term home. And we had 22 people show up again on a rainy workday to help us unload our U-Haul and get settled in. And, I mean, I think that those stories kind of set the tone for the way that Greystone embraces her people. It would be one thing if they only did this for their new senior pastor, but they do this for each other, too. I mean, they're always there to share life together, to spend time together, to show up when there's a need. So they have a big heart. They love each other. And they're deeply rooted in their neighborhood. Part of their identity is a church for the neighborhood. And so one of the things that we are wrestling with now is, what does it mean to be on our little corner in our neighborhood? And, you know, how are we, you mentioned the pandemic, how are we as an online church, super local and super global all at the same time? You know, we know where we are geographically, but right now we're online, which means we're everywhere. So there's a tension there with that calling and with that gift of community.
Say more about how your worship and pastoral care have evolved in the midst of all the social distancing and mask wearing.
Yeah. You know, this is a really challenging thing I think every pastor, every congregation is dealing with right now. Let me talk about pastoral care first, because I think that is still something that we're all trying to figure out. You know, when members of your congregation are sick, the first thing that a pastor usually does is call or show up physically. When people are in the hospital, you show up. Our pattern was to have a different pastor kind of on the calendar for every weekday when the office was open. And so all of that came to a halt. You know, we like to be with each other. I just mentioned our superpower is community. So when people are hurting, when they're grieving, when things are hard, then our inclination is to draw close to each other, to show up in homes and sit together. And we haven't been able to do any of that. And so that's been very, very difficult, just like it has in every other setting. Some of the things that we have done for pastoral care in the last 8 or 9 weeks, you know, we've jumped on the phone a lot. My daughter jokes with me that my iPhone battery is always dead, so she can never FaceTime with her friends. And that's true because I'm on it all day. We're on Zoom constantly, trying to see one another, trying to check in with one another, make sure everybody is okay. Fortunately for us, we have not had too many hospitalizations. And to my knowledge, as of today, we have not had anyone directly impacted with a COVID-19 diagnosis. And so we haven't had to deal with that. But the separation, especially in times of grief and end-of-life situations where the community can't come together and mourn, you know, a death the ways that we know how, kind of separates us from the whole grief process. So my thought is when we get back together, there may be a whole lot of collective grief that is still unresolved because our bodies haven't gone through the motions of mourning like we normally would. So as pastors, that's a challenge that, you know, we're facing constantly. So we're just trying to check in with each other and figure out how to do it in this new world. I think you also asked about the worship life of the church. So Greystone is a kind of a medium-sized church. We've got about 800 members, and we see 225-ish on a given Sunday. For us, that has looked like two services, one at 8:45 and one at 11. Mm-hmm. We have a healthy Sunday school program where a lot of our folks are connected, and the Sunday activities really are kind of the pulse of our communities, that rhythm of gathering together, seeing each other, shaking hands, talking about the week. There are some Sunday school classes where the prayers and concerns goes on for 30 minutes and the lesson is 15. So, you know, we're really in that rhythm of connecting on Sundays. And overnight, we had to cancel it. When we made the decision on a Thursday, we thought we might be away for maybe 4 weeks. There was a hope of coming back together on Easter for kind of a just a big procession. And then when that didn't happen, there was a hope that we would come together for Pentecost. And that's not happening either. So there are kind of cycles. There's a roller coaster of hope and disappointment that we've been on. Greystone did not have a live stream set up before any of this. We had been, over the last year, making plans to start digital ministry, to get online, to have an intentional and strategic presence with our online neighbors. But we hadn't done it yet. We have a job description ready to go. It hasn't been posted yet. So overnight, we just had to call on our lay leaders who are gifted in video and recording, audio, all that stuff, and ask them to meet us at the church late one night. I think several of us were there until 10 trying to make a welcome video to a brand new YouTube channel and then trying to write out to our congregation, you know, we saw you on Wednesday night at dinner, and we thought we'd see you on Sunday, but we're not. You're going to have to log on here, click here, go there, you know, save it, subscribe, whatever, and we'll send you a link. Every Sunday morning by 8:45, you'll get a link. And so we just kind of went online, and what we found is that a lot of our folks, especially now as we get closer to summer, would normally be at their beach houses, and they're able to join us for worship, whereas they weren't before. Our Sunday school classes went on Zoom, and their attendance is actually up. So for Greystone, this has been an interesting experiment in what it means to be a practicing community of faith online. We've done communion. One of the things that has shocked me is I'm a bread baker, and it's just kind of been my self-care for the last several years, 20 years or so. And so when we went online, I decided to host a Zoom class, and I thought I would teach people how to make the communion challah, which is something that I had done before, you know, I would make the challah for our physical gatherings. So I set up a couple of calls. I posted it on Facebook, and it's become a monthly gathering. So anybody who wants to learn how to make communion challah on the Saturday before the first Sunday communion joins me in my kitchen and there in theirs, and we make bread together. And each time we've done it, we've had about 15 or 20 people who are making bread together. Last time, I asked everybody to separate the recipe, to divide it up and to make maybe four smaller loaves instead of two larger ones. And to think about the people in our church who might appreciate getting a visit or getting a loaf of bread. So after the bread was all baked, everybody was texting pictures back and forth. And we mentioned who we wanted to bring the bread to, just to make sure that we weren't overlapping. And the stories that came back after people had made the bread and baked it and said a prayer kind of as they were kneading it, thinking about the people who would receive it, using this as a way to kind of bond the community back together. They went and delivered the bread and came back saying, wow, I didn't realize how much my soul needed that, you know, just to see them through the window or just to know that they were there or to get their thank you text, just really meant the world. So we're figuring it out. It was a long answer to a short question, but we're figuring it out together, how to do this thing called online community.
Chrissy, your sermon today draws from the gospel lesson in Matthew chapter 13. Would you read it for us?
Absolutely. So I'm going to read Matthew 13, 24 through 30, and then 36 through 43. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven may be compared to someone who sowed good seed in his field. But while everybody was asleep, an enemy came and sowed weeds among the wheat, and then went away. So when the plants came up and bore grain, then the weeds appeared as well. And the slaves of the householder came and said to him, "Master, did you not sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" He answered, "An enemy has done this." The slaves said to him, "Then do you want us to go and gather them?" But he replied, "No, for in the gathering, the weeds, you would uproot the wheat along with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, 'Collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn.'" Then he left the crowds and went into the house. And his disciples approached him, saying, "Explain to us the parable of the weeds of the field." He answered, "The one who sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed are the children of the kingdom. The weeds are the children of the evil one. And the enemy who sowed them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the reapers are angels. Just as the weeds are collected and burned up with fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send his angels, and they will collect out of his kingdom all causes of sin and all evildoers. And they will throw them into the furnace of fire, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father. Let anyone with ears listen."
Chrissy, we look forward to hearing your message, "The Gospel According to the Compost Pile." Thank you for sharing it with us.
Sure. Thank you for having me. Anyone who's ever tried their hand at gardening knows that the outcomes are completely unpredictable. From drought to flood, springtime frost to midsummer heat waves, and worst of all, bug infestations. When we humans attempt to collaborate with Mother Nature, we have to learn to let go of our control issues. No matter how hard we try, we cannot control what grows in our gardens. We just can't predict the outcomes. In the creation business, 2 + 2 does not always equal a nice, clean, predictable 4. At the church I served in Charlotte, North Carolina, there was a ministry called Earth Keepers. This was a dedicated group of folks who were really on the cutting edge of environmental stewardship, and this is before it was cool. The Earth Keepers, they were smart, they were compassionate about their work, they were dedicated to their mission, and they knew everything about gardening. And this was great for me because I had this tiny little startup garden in my backyard. Anytime I had a question, I had a whole group of experts at the church I could go to for advice. For some time, the Earth Keepers kept a community garden on the church grounds. They'd grow all kinds of produce, squash and tomatoes, cucumbers, peas, basil, you name it. They grew it. Cold weather and warm weather crops, there was always something growing in their garden. One year they added a compost heap to the garden project. It was a huge wooden structure that was adjacent to a brick wall separating the garden area from the church dumpsters. The church kitchen would toss in scraps from community meals, and church members were also encouraged to bring items from home to add to the pile. And over time, the compost pile did what compost piles do, and the scraps and leftovers began to decompose, forming nutrient-rich soil to go back into the garden. From time to time, voluntary plants would pop up in the compost pile. And one of the faithful earthkeeper gardeners would have to decide whether the sprout was a good one that should be planted in the garden, or if it was a weed that needed to be pulled out and tossed aside. You get all kinds of strange things in a compost pile. One year, a vigorous new vine emerged and quickly began to grow in the compost. The earthkeepers couldn't identify it, and so they were puzzled about whether or not to pull it up or let it grow. Well, by some stroke of luck, genius, or perhaps good faith, the gardeners, who perhaps were familiar with today's gospel reading, they decided not to pull it up, but rather to wait and see what it might become. The vine grew to extraordinary lengths, quickly climbing out of the compost pile. It covered the garden floor, leaving little space for gardeners to walk between the raised beds. It also grew out the other side, climbing up the brick wall and down around the dumpsters. I have never seen a vine so massive. It filled absolutely every inch of unclaimed space over on that side of the church. Left alone to grow and mature for the summer growing season, the vine eventually produced gigantic, pumpkin-like fruits that were deep green. It was the color of an acorn squash. One brave gardener and his wife took one of them home. They cooked it and ate it for dinner. Well, they survived the night, and they lived to testify that the crop was both non-toxic and absolutely delicious. Over the course of that summer, this mystery vine ended up producing over 100 pounds of food that went to a local nonprofit called Friendship Trays. All because of the patience of our gardeners and their wise curiosity that urged the rest of us to wait and see what would become of that vine, 100 pounds of food went to serve a local nonprofit. A gardener sows good seed in the field, but while she is sleeping, another gardener sows weeds among the wheat and then vanishes into the night. Before long, the servants notice the weeds growing together with the wheat, and immediately they want to pull them out. And it's a reasonable response, but in the world of the parable, reasonable is seldomly rewarded. Instead of indulging the temptation to rush to judgment, the good, patient gardener says, "No, let's wait, watch, and see what comes. After all, we don't want to risk uprooting the wheat and pulling up the weeds. Let's just wait. Let them both grow together until harvest. And at harvest time, I will tell the reapers, collect the weeds first and bind them in bundles to be burned, but gather the wheat into my barn." This parable, perhaps more than most, resonates deeply with our human fascination with creating groups of us and them. We want to know who is in and who is out, and we want to secure our place in the in-group because we never want to have to feel the isolation and the loneliness of being left out or being thrown out. In its original context, this parable of Jesus undoubtedly brought comfort to his disciples who faced daily persecution and judgment and hostility against their movement. Viewing themselves as the children of God, they might have found a peaceful sense of patience with the way things were going. But somewhere between then and now, popular interpretations of this parable have grown to encourage dreadful and deadly ideologies that seem to overlook that little part about holding out judgment. The problems with this are fairly self-evident, but none is more problematic than the theological certainty produced by those who just know that we are the children of God and they are not. And churches are really good at this. And honestly, that should scare us to death. Parables are intended to arrest the reader by their strangeness. They're intended to subvert our worldview and to leave us with more questions than answers. So why is it that this one tends to feel so definitive? Have we traded our sense of spiritual curiosity for the lure of eternal certainty? In Jewish thought, there's an idea that human beings are created with two inclinations. Each of us is born with an inclination toward good and an inclination toward evil or self-interest. We spend our entire lives sorting out those pieces of ourselves. It's no wonder we can't accurately do it with others. Often we think we can identify the flaws in our neighbors. We think it's pretty clear that what they're doing is wrong. But more often, those flaws are merely a projection of something that we don't like or have repressed deep within our own selves. Quickly, we must come to terms with the reality that the lines between right and wrong and good and evil, righteousness and unrighteousness, those lines are blurred and permeable. Neither of us is fully weed or wheat. We are both. A similar conclusion is found in a book called The Gospel of Solentiname. Solentiname is a remote peasant village in Lake Nicaragua. Each week in the 1960s and 70s, the priest would come through and the people would gather. And in lieu of a sermon on the gospel reading for the day, there would be discussions. The people together would reflect on the reading. The author of the book, Ernesto Cardenal, was their priest, and he recorded their conversations because, for him, their discussions were often more profound than those of many theologians that he's read. But they reflected the simplicity of the gospel readings themselves. That's not surprising, he writes. The gospel, or the good news, meaning good news to the poor, was written for them, by people like them. The peasants of Solentiname discuss today's reading from Matthew 13, and they echo the notion of two inclinations from our Jewish sisters and brothers, saying that the weeds and the wheat represent justice and injustice in our world. They add that often the two, justice and injustice, good and evil, often they are so intertwined that they cannot be distinguished or separated from one another. The peasants agree that it is our responsibility to work towards becoming the wheat, which is, of course, justice. It is righteousness. And that requires a patient, faithful, and carefully discerning spirit. In the same period as the peasants of Solentiname were gathering each week to discuss the gospel, Latin America experienced great political and economic unrest. There were priests like Camilo Torres who worked hard to unite the peasant farmers, students, slum dwellers, and trade unionists to advocate for their liberation, engaging methods of nonviolent resistance. It was the right thing to do. But Torres soon came to the conclusion that working within the system as a priest in the Catholic Church, he would never be able to help usher in the change that was so desperately needed. In 1965, Torres discarded his vestments and joined the Colombian Revolutionary Forces, saying, "I took off my cassock to be more truly a priest." Of course, there were many who did not agree about this means of achieving justice for the people. Like his friend and fellow priest Gustavo Gutierrez, they remained committed to nonviolence, and they could not condone his decision to join the Revolutionary Forces, even for a righteous cause. Perhaps they recognized that there's a sprout of both wheat and weed in each of us, even those we meet on the many battlefields of life, and perhaps they understood that the decision to pluck up and cast out is never ours to make. Like my friend, the faithful earthkeeper, looking at that mysterious vine climbing all over the garden, I can hear the spirit begin to whisper, "Just wait a while. Let's see what comes of this one here." One of the most perplexing things about parables is that you never really get to know who is what and what is who. Take this one, for example. The kingdom of heaven is like a gardener. The whole kingdom is like a gardener who sowed good seed into good ground. Little seeds of heaven sown right into the gardener's creation. But then comes another sower, the enemy of heaven. Hell, perhaps. This one sowing the seeds of hell or evil, but also into that very same garden. The garden that was God's creation. So both are growing together within God's own created garden. We've often thought that we, whoever we are the children of God. But I wonder, what if we are the garden? What if the seeds of heaven were sown within us and began to germinate until the seeds of hell were sown right alongside them? What if the weeds of hell have also grown, perhaps unnoticed, right there alongside a more promising crop? Perhaps we have felt the pinch of greed squeeze out the sprouts of generosity that were beginning to take form. Perhaps we've experienced a surge of self-doubt just as confidence helped us to answer God's call. Or maybe a sprig of fear threatens to isolate us from our neighbors, touting self-protection as a human right as opposed to beloved community as our sacred calling. The weeds and the wheat, they all look so similar at first. How will we know what needs to go and what needs to grow? Perhaps we won't. And that's okay. Because if there's one thing that is fairly clear from this perplexing parable, whether we're children of God, children of the evil one, or some combination of both, whether we are servants of the master or the compost that is being worked into the garden, the project of sorting the weeds and the wheat is not ours to complete. But even still, perhaps we might find a sprout of hope growing up within us, for our master gardener is full of patience, grace, and a whole pile of curiosity. Can't you just hear the gardener's voice whispering gently, "Hold on, don't pull that one up quite yet. Let's just wait and see what she might become." Amen.
You've been listening to the Reverend Chrissy Tatum Williamson, Senior Pastor of Greystone Baptist Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. For a free transcript of her message, The Gospel According to the Compost Pile, call us at 404-815-9110. That's 404-815-9110. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Remember, Day 1 depends on the financial gifts of faithful listeners like you. Please consider supporting our ministry with a generous donation. We appreciate it. This is Peter Wallace. Next week on Day 1, we're honored to welcome the Reverend Dr. Monty Knight, a counselor and minister in the Christian Church Disciples of Christ based in Charleston, South Carolina. You won't want to miss his life-giving message entitled, On Knowing Not How to Pray. That's next time on Day 1. Now, Chrissy Williamson offers some final reflections on today's message. Chrissy, I've tried gardening in the past, and maybe I don't have the patience required. As you explained, no matter how hard we try, we cannot control what grows in our gardens. We can't predict the outcomes. And that was the case with the Earthkeepers Group's compost pile vine that you told us about. I want to ask you about our common desire to control outcomes, which can seem ridiculous in many cases, and yet we continue to try to force things our way. You said waiting patiently for outcomes can bring about much more fruit than we can even anticipate. So where does this desire to control come from, and how might it manifest itself in our lives?
That's a great question. You know, I'll speak in the first person, and I think that the way that I experience this may strike a chord with some of your listeners. My desire to control things is usually rooted in a fear about what might be. My desire to control things is part of a sense of security that I have created for myself. If I live the right way, if I do the right things, if I save enough money, if I'm nice to people at work, then everything will all be okay. I won't lose my job. I won't find myself broke. I won't lose my house. My kid will always have food on the table, and my life will be happy. It's part of the myth that we've been taught, and I think many of us have bought it, and I know that I have. And so when I think about why I like to control things, it's because it makes me feel better. It makes me feel like I've earned what I have, and it's mine to keep, and it's mine to lose. And so as long as I stay on the straight and narrow, then everything's going to be okay. And I think kind of the events of the last several weeks have reminded us that there are some things we cannot control. And the pandemic that we have all been experiencing is a very real, lived, bodily experience of that lack of control. There is absolutely nothing we can do to stop this train. It's left the station. It's everywhere. But I think another piece of this, something that I've been reminded of, is our life of faith is also something that we cannot control. And I think that's a good thing. You asked some questions earlier about the church and what does it mean to be a church that has to go online? How do you even do that? How do you do pastoral care? How do you do worship? How do you do community? And I think 10 weeks ago, if you'd asked that question, we would have said, well, you can't. And the real answer to that question is, well, we couldn't using the tools that we had in place before because we were trying to control the outcomes based on the church that we knew in the past. And what we've learned now is that God is bigger than that. God is at work in the garden of the earth, growing up all kinds of things that we see, and often we name them weed or wheat. We name them church or not church, or Christian or not Christian, or righteous or unrighteous. But often we're wrong about that. And I think the pandemic is teaching me a little bit about that, and I wonder if others are in the same boat. So I think that God might have a vision for the church that is bigger than the building. I think that God might have a vision for our relationships that are bigger than what we can do with people who are in the room with us. And so I'm trying to let go, to loosen my grip a little bit on what the future looks like. And I'm trying to pay attention to the sprouts that are growing up around me. I'm trying to pour water where I can, reflect sunlight where I can, and not judge prematurely.
This parable does resonate deeply, you said, with our human fascination with creating groups of us and them. But what we learn in life is that none of us is fully weed or wheat. We are a mixture of both. So how should we cultivate the garden of our life, our soul, so that we can produce wholesome fruit?
How do we cultivate to make sure that our lives produce more wheat than weed? I think a deep spiritual practice of listening is very important. I think a deep spiritual practice of tuning out things like cable news and social media feeds, anything with an algorithm that's meant to remind us that we're right and everybody else is wrong. That's a deep spiritual practice that will help us identify which sprigs of wheat in our lives need to be grown up. I think we need to get out of the practice of telling others what is weed in their life and what is wheat in their life. I think we need to cultivate a deep trust for one another in the spiritual journey, recognizing that your garden's not going to look like mine and mine's not going to look like yours, but kind of trusting God to grow what is needed, what is necessary, and what's going to be able to take root and flourish. You know, the soil that you deal with and Georgia is different from the soil that I deal with in North Carolina. Even from my house in the Charlotte area to my house in Raleigh, the sunlight's different. And so I'm having to learn what's going to grow here and what's not going to grow. And similarly, the congregations that I've served are different. And so I'm learning what's going to grow, what's not going to grow. And I think each of us needs to do that in our own spiritual lives. A good litmus test, in my opinion, is does this practice, does this ideology, and does the way it play out look like the ministry of Jesus? And if not, let me question it. If this ideology or theology or spiritual practice or doctrine of the church, if it serves more to cut others out than to let others in, then I need to reexamine it.
Chrissy, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind in the days ahead?
One thing that was new to me, every time I go back to a text, there's something new that I didn't see before. To me, this time, what I'm learning and what I hope others can learn as well is an experience of grace. And as I'm thinking about all the fears and the anxieties that we're having right now because we just have to let go of predictable outcomes, in some ways I think that those fears and anxieties are what God is going to pull out of us and cast into the fire so that we can live freely. And so I hope that others can hear a word of grace in this, that God, our Master Gardener, is not through with us yet, that we're still growing up like a wild crop. And it's okay if even we can't see what is wheat and what is weed. But the point is that we continue to look. We continue to be curious, and we continue to be able to step back and say, I'm just going to wait and see.
Chrissy Tatum Williamson, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller wishing you all God's blessings on day one and forever.